Service.
Welcome, and thank you for standing by. At this time, all participants are in a listen mode. After the presentation, we will conduct a question and answer session. To ask a question, please press star then one. You will be prompted to record your first and last name. Today's conference is being recorded. If there are any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I'd now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Nicola Myers. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Dorian. Good afternoon, everyone, and to those who may be on the West Coast, good morning to you. My name, as Dorian just mentioned, is Nicola Myers. Thank you for joining us for today's FDIC webinar, Learning from the FDIC Youth Savings Pilot. The speakers for today's presentations include some of FDIC's youth banking team members, which includes Tracy Morris, our Senior Community Affairs Specialist, Luke Reynolds, Chief of Outreach and Program Development, and myself. In addition, we are joined by three speakers representing some of the participants in the FDIC's Youth Savings Pilot that you will hear from a little later in today's presentation. They are Michelle Huddleston from Commercial Bank, Patty Fleming from Trainor Bank, and Alana Parker from First Metro Bank. The FDIC's work with America's youth is one part of our efforts to expand access to and use of mainstream financial institutions by unbanked and underbanked households in the United States. Building banking relationships in school is a worthwhile strategy. FDIC's work to engage the next generation is a very important part of the FDIC's efforts to promote greater economic inclusion, which will help strengthen the banking system. Building banking relationships in school is a worthwhile strategy because research tells us that students have more positive attitudes towards banks and are more likely to have a bank account if there's a branch of a federally insured financial institution in their school. Earlier this year, the FDIC released a report on lessons learned from our Youth Savings Pilot Program. 21 banks participated in the pilot, and these banks generally saw their outreach programs grow to engage more young people. Banks in the pilot emphasized the profound impact these programs made on students and their families, and sometimes they helped develop future bank employees. What you have on the screen today is just an overview of the goal for the Youth Savings Pilot. The goal is to highlight promising ways to combine financial education and savings accounts for school-aged children. There were two phases to the bank, and it included 21 two phases to the pilot, and it included 21 participating banks. Nine banks were selected for phase one of the pilot, which was 2014 to the 2015 school year, and then also the 2015 to the 2016 school year. These banks were already working with schools or nonprofits to help students open savings accounts in conjunction with their financial education programs. Then an additional 12 banks were selected for phase two, which took place between 2015 and the 2016 school year. And these banks were beginning or expanding on youth savings account financial education programs that they had in place. To learn about the banks and their respective programs, we had quite a few calls and over 90 one-on-one calls, in addition to many group calls. And in addition, we also collected surveys. Approximately over 50 surveys were taken to get an idea of all of what the pilot encompasses. Today, we'll summarize the pilot learnings, and at the end of the webinar, if this is something your bank wants to do more of or even start, we'll give you the opportunity to join more than 40 banks in the youth banking network. The goal of the network is to help banks network in to connect financial education to savings accounts for school-aged children to learn from one another and FDIC staff. An example of just showing you how the youth banking network is already working, we had types of communications and where we had a memorandum of understanding, a template of a memorandum of understanding that was shared with from one bank with the other banks in the network. So, and that memorandum of understanding was to show what is entailed in opening a school branch. So this is just to give you a brief overview of today, the purpose of today's webinar. what I'd like to do right now is to turn it to Tracy, who is going to give you some key learnings from the Youth Savings Pilot. Tracy?
Thank you, Nicola, and good afternoon. So I'm going to just talk a little bit about the pilot report and then a roadmap, and then turn it over to the bankers. So as Nicola mentioned, we released the pilot report in March of 2017. What did we learn from the pilot? First, we learned that the benefits of the program go far beyond the dollars and cents of the money in the accounts of the school-age children and youth. Including improving a child's financial future, banks are in a position to offer hands-on learning, helping students open a real savings account and manage their own money at an early age. Schools and nonprofits recognize that financially fit children, youth, and adults help to generate positive change in their communities, and teachers that were involved in the youth savings programs were recognized that these programs could strengthen academic success in related subjects such as math. Banks also felt that participation in the pilot and in these types of programs helped to strengthen their community involvement, and it's central to the bank's mission. Bank employees expressed personal accomplishment from working with children and youth. We heard over and over how this was one of the highlights of their days working with the youth savings programs. Nonprofits stated that youth savings activities are complementary to their financial capability efforts. We heard over and over that these programs help to build goodwill toward the bank and their communities, and they also can build a pipeline of future customers. Some of the young people who had accounts with the banks in an in-school savings program later on came back to the bank as young adults to open their accounts. Obviously, there's also the ability to receive CRA consideration, but we found that that was probably not one of the biggest reasons banks got involved. It was more for the other reasons. So after we sat down over the 2 years with the banks in the pilot, we decided to come up with a template or a framework of how to establish, support, and expand or a youth savings program. What were the high-level project planning phases did banks go through? All participants, I must say, went through these general phases, but the actual time spent in each phase depended varied greatly from bank to bank. So let's get started and go through the phases. Phase one is planning. In this phase, it's important that not only the bank but identify its objectives and potential benefits. For example, student bank accounts may address financial need in the community, such as building college savings, or expand the reach of financial education to youth or to the students' families. Looking at these, the bank should look not only the objectives for themselves, but also for the schools that they may be partnering with. The next is to engage partners. Talk to the partners about what's in it for them, basically. And in terms of identifying partners, and you'll hear this later on from our bankers, is that partners can be found in many, many different places. So just be open to that. In terms of partners, a potential challenge for schools and teachers, there may be a certain reluctance that partnering with a bank may be viewed as a commercial activity, but that's something just to think about and work through as you start working with school partners. And also maybe that's a point where you would bring in a nonprofit to maybe take a leadership, more of a leadership role. The next phase is design, and there's a couple of really important questions and answers to go around design. The first is the selection of a program model, an approach to the account ownership structure, and to delivery of student financial education. In terms of the models, there are a couple that we found throughout our pilot that were in use. Primarily, they centered around three different types. First, the school branches. This is where a bank opens a permanent branch on the school premises. Typically, it's managed by experienced bank employees with student bankers working as customer service reps, tellers, etc. We primarily saw this model being used in high schools. The next model was the in-school banking. In this model, a bank set up an in-school bank in a common area, such as a school cafeteria, gym, library, in some cases an unused classroom, and this was done on designated banking days. Typically, this was used with the younger children, grades K through six. Finally, we saw in the pilot that several of our participants used the model where the students would go to a nearby branch. The bank would go into the school, teach financial education, and provide the children and youth the opportunity to go to one of their nearby branches, perhaps get a tour of the branch, and to encourage them to open an account at that branch. One of the second, or the second key design consideration is account ownership structure. The three structures that we saw in the pilot were non-custodial accounts, where the accounts were in the child or youth name alone, and there was no adult on the account. The bankers that provided these types of accounts felt that students had a greater sense of ownership since no one else was on the account but them. The second type of account structure was the custodial account with a parent or guardian as the custodian. And this provided the parent or guardian an opportunity to also interact with the bank, especially during the account opening process. Finally, some of the banks in our pilot used a trust custodial or other administrative account held by the school or nonprofit partner. These accounts were very useful when a school wanted to maintain the account to hold the deposit for multiple students in the class, especially for things such as college savings initiatives that were led by nonprofit community foundation. Other key elements that we wanted the banks to look at were all of the accounts should be consistent with the core principles and features of the FDIC's Model Safe Account template. In particular, the account should be low opening balance and low minimum monthly balance, and typically no fees whatsoever. Just as an aside, we heard from many of the pilot participants that youth in particular really liked mobile banking features and remote check deposits. In terms of assisting with the design considerations, the FDIC has a couple of of resources that we'll talk about later on, but just want to direct you to the interagency guidance to encourage financial institutions, youth savings programs, and address related frequently asked questions. That guidance addresses common questions, misunderstandings of existing guidelines and regulations around customer identification, branch opening, etc. Another thing that we heard was the lack of clarity around whether accounts could be opened for minors in their names alone, so a non-custodial account. The FDIC worked with the Conference of State Banking Supervisors to develop a resource that identifies state-specific laws and other rules related to youth banking. And again, that's a resource that is also on our Youth Banking Network pages. In terms of design strategy for financial education delivery, we saw that banks had a formal instruction where they would go in and discuss different topics. Bankers would go in periodically, whether it would be every other week, maybe once a month, to deliver financial education. Also, some banks use peer-based, where they would work with youth in the school who would go out and train their peers. And then there was also a lot of just-in-time information sharing. For instance, especially during the school branches where youth would go in to open accounts, their peer tellers, the peer bankers would talk to them about the accounts and how to maintain the accounts and different information for them. Regardless of the type of delivery, it should be fun and interactive. It's helpful, especially for the teachers, if it integrates well with other subjects. And we found that there are a lot of curricula out there, including the FDIC's Money Smart for Young People. And regardless of the curricula, the idea of having the financial education along with the opportunity to save is very, very important. The next phase is to identify the roles and responsibilities. This slide talks about the different possible bank contributions, which would include, of course, staff time, materials, marketing, monetary incentives, and account setup, among just to name a few. And then also the partner contributions, which would be either the school or the nonprofit partner. In terms of these things, there's also their staff time as well. And for the teachers especially, their contribution is, in a large part, is allowing access to the students during that classroom time, that was something that a lot of the bankers would have loved to have been in the classroom a lot longer, but they wanted to get in as often as they could to help teach the children and youth. After the decisions on the roles and responsibilities, the next phase is implementation. When you prepare all of those who will work with the students, and that includes the teachers, the peer student will either be taking the deposits or teaching financial education to their peers, as well as any nonprofit partner that the banks are working with. This involves regular communication and talking about, you know, just reiterating the roles and responsibilities. And also, if parents are being involved, bring them in early and let them know what their roles are as well. The next two phases are assess and refine. And above all, the key here is to communicate with the school partner, maintain regular communication, what works, what doesn't work, communicate with the parents, not only those parents who are working with the program at the school, but the parents of the students. Sending home regular communications, especially for the younger students, letting them know when the banking days are, letting them know what the students are learning is always helpful to bring them into the process. Communicating with any nonprofit partners, what they can do to help and how they can be engaged, and also, of course, to communicate with the students. Make sure the students really understand what, in their words, what is it that we're trying to do to help them in terms of their learning. And then make changes as needed. There's no set formula, and nothing is always going to work. So assess and refine is the key. So with that, Nicola?
Great. Thank you so very much, Tracy. We do have one question in the queue, but my thought is that we would wait until we have the three presenters because they may, in fact, answer your questions, if that works for everyone. Okay, so what I'll do now is introduce Michelle Hudson. Michelle is with Commercial Bank. And Michelle, you may go right ahead, and what I'll do for you is to change the screen. So you just let me know, next slide, I'll be happy to change it for you.
Okay, thank you, Nicola. Good afternoon, everyone. Commercial Bank first partnered with Harlan County, Kentucky Public School System in 2015 and 16 to bring a program we call SmartSense into each of their 8 elementary and middle schools. We have had a long-term relationship with the Harlan County School System and operate 2 branches in this remote area of eastern Kentucky. Harlan County is a rural and isolated area with a declining population and an increasing unemployment rate. Children are often left with little hope and don't always believe they can find employment or dream of bright futures. Often saving for tomorrow is a concept they have never heard of. Longtime Commercial Bank employee Abby Walker had been lobbying our bank's product review and development committee for several years. She was a strong advocate for the next generation of consumers and business leaders in the community she grew up in. In early 2015, we finally agreed to offer a partnership for a student savings program. We went to a principal's meeting after talking with the superintendent of the Harlan County Schools on the phone. All we went with was a piece of paper and a pencil and some general ideas of how the program would work. The superintendent and most administrators immediately jumped on board and endorsed the program. So we asked for an informal 3-year commitment to let us work through the development of the program. We promised to be responsive and flexible to the needs and wants of the school system. We thought our program would work well with math class, but we found greater success working with a position called Family Resource Directors. The resource directors were more comfortable working with business partners, and they work with students and families in other home and life skill programs. Next slide. SmartSense has 2 separate program features. You do not have to do one to participate in the other. The first part of the program is financial literacy lessons taught by Commercial Bank employees each month. We use the FDIC Money Smart program and have found it very easy to use and grade level appropriate. We assigned a specific banker to each school and committed to 5 hours per month in each of their 8 schools. At first, we asked the school to decide the topic and the schedule. Our intent was to give them flexibility in scheduling and variety in the topics taught. However, in some cases, it seemed to cause an undue burden on staff. Some were very organized and even used classroom projects to coordinate with their lesson plans. However, some were not as eager to plan the banker in the classroom or wanted us to go multiple classes within the day, limiting our time with each group of students. The multiple lessons in the same day proved trying for our bankers. Even though this approach exposed more students to financial literacy, it was felt that the impact was stronger when we met with the same students periodically and were able to spend enough time in the class to have both instruction and activities. But in all cases, we felt the experience was positive and successful. The second part of SmartSense is a student savings account that is opened by paperwork completed by the parent or guardian and returned to the school. The parent guardian is never required to come to the bank. The school agreed to verify the CIP information provided on the paperwork so that we could use alternative CIP verification. The account can be opened at any time during the school year. We have two employees who visit each school biweekly. They gather this paperwork and key the new account when returning to the office, mailing a thank you letter with required disclosures at that time. In addition to lightening the account opening process, we also lowered the account opening deposit from $100 to $1, and actually a few times we've accepted less than that. And we are paying a higher rate of interest than we do to regular savings account customers. The same two bank employees who are responsible for new account documentation also schedule with each school a time and place to be available biweekly to accept deposits from the students. Most schools schedule early morning or lunch and give us space in the library or cafeteria. It was important for the bank, and more so for the school district, that our savings accounts not reward students differently because of the amount of a deposit or balance in the account. So with each deposit made, regardless of amount, they are given an item such as stickers, bubbles, or pencils. Each student account holder is mailed a birthday card during the month of their birthday. Local merchants have readily donated items such as free personal pizzas, movie passes, or ice cream to be the gift in the birthday card. At the end of the school year, we give each school the choice of an ice cream or pizza party, in addition to presenting a savings certificate to each account holder at their awards day, field day, or just at the end of your party. We also take opportunities to appreciate faculty and staff that support and endorse our program. Those bankers who were involved in the SmartSense program as either presenters or those who visited the school throughout the year met at the end of the year to discuss the good and the bad. Certain members of this group also met with principals and schools for the same purpose. Next slide. Both the bank and the school district felt the first year was a great success, and the second year has been even better. The numbers support the success, but as Tracy has said, there are many other rewards of the program. Bankers such as myself would come back from a day spent at their school with special stories and a newfound respect for a classroom teacher. We also learned the struggles these children were seeing and had a renewed energy to helping them meet their financial goals and dreams and showing them hope for a brighter future. The schools overwhelmingly wanted us to take a stronger lead at the beginning of the school year in explaining to students and parents how the savings accounts program worked. The first year, we just sent home a letter with students in their orientation packet from the school. Our second year, we attended open house events and went from class to class for a 5 to 10 minute presentation of how the program would work. And just as a way to show that, one school, in the first year, we had one student participating, and then the second year at that same school, we had 41. Another lesson learned is that the middle school age students were not very impressed with stickers and such as incentives to participate. So with the second year, we implemented a reward card for grades 5 through 8. Each deposit qualified for a hole punch, and after 10, the student could cash in for a Commercial Bank SmartSense t-shirt or backpack. We also addressed the problem of some bank presenters who felt overwhelmed with doing presentations multiple times in one day on a tight schedule. We all agreed that we were most effective in the classrooms of 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders. So we asked the school to allow us in those classes, and in some cases, the schools enrollment allow them to combine those classes into one classroom for the purposes of our lessons. The hardest hurdle that we are still trying to overcome is parental support of the program. Some parents are hesitant to open a bank account, afraid that assets will be held against them for receiving government benefits, and some students are hesitant to open a bank account for fear that their custodian will take their money. Next slide. Banking is not always fun, but smart sense certainly has been. Our bank volunteers who teach financial literacy all drive more than 1 hour to get to their school, so it is basically a full day per month out of the office. This sounds like a great idea until you realize your day of work is waiting for your return. But each bank employee eagerly signed up for the second year and have already signed up for the third year as well. We believe in what we are doing. The children love the program and look forward to banker visits. The teachers and administration have bought into the program and are seeking ways to enhance our partnerships. We've been asked to help in grant writing and other special projects in the schools. And also, before the 16 and 17 school year began, we were contacted by two other school systems who had heard about our program and wanted us to bring it in their district. We have grandparents stop in who have children participating in our SmartSense program and want to open up SmartSense accounts for other family members that do not live in the Harlan County School District. We've also received letters of thanks and appreciation from our regulators, those same regulators that give us our CRA ratings, I might add. And in closing, my advice to a bank starting out is to start small, become comfortable with curriculum, and allow time for bankers to learn how to teach and connect with the children. This will not be a natural fit for everyone. It will seem overwhelming in the beginning because bankers were just not teachers. Use the Money Smart programs. They are great, and there's no reason to reinvent the wheel. And realize that the benefits to the program will be recognized for years to come. Implementing a student savings and or financial literacy program will not improve the bottom line immediately. Although if you implement correctly, it doesn't have to be a huge expense either. But it is an investment, not a profit center. And by all means, have fun with it, because bankers don't get to do that every day. Thank you.
Michelle, thank you so very much for that. Okay, now we're going to hear from Patty Fleming at Traynor State Bank. Patty, are you on the line?
Ms. Fleming, if you could press star zero to open your line.
I know we were experiencing some technical difficulties, so in case she's not on the line, we'll go ahead and move on to the next person.
One moment. Fleming's line is now in conference.
Great, thank you.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Great. I am Patty Fleming, and I'm the Financial Literacy Banking Coordinator for TS Institute, and I'm calling behalf on Bob Mantell, who is the Director of Financial and Economic Education for Traynor State Bank. He leads the TS Institute, which is a nonprofit affiliate of the bank, and our mission is to promote and enhance financial and economic in school districts and with nonprofit organizations where Traynor State Bank has a presence. Traynor State Bank facilitates 5 in-school banking programs. We do have a K-12 program where students can participate from an elementary level all the way up to a high school level. We do have 3 elementary banks in place, 1 middle school branch, and then one in the high school, which is a chartered branch bank. We are going to open up another elementary school, this bank in school this fall. TS Bank and the partnering school sets up the in-school bank in either a common area, a library, or an unused classroom on designated bank days. We do this usually once a week for approximately 2 hours in the morning, and this is a K-8 program. TS Bank staff works with the school educators to accept applications and interview the candidates for the 12 at the elementary level positions, We usually use fourth or fifth grade students at the elementary, which is K through five grades, to be student tellers. Our business students at the middle school apply for positions, and the high school seniors from their business program also apply to be the CSRs at their school branch as well. A nice thing about having the seniors at their branch, they also come and assist at our elementary schools during, they get about a 45-minute time frame that they can come and assist at our elementary levels, which works with their business program at the high school. So back with our elementary CSRs, we assist them. They are trained to assist the students with their deposits. They count the money. They complete the deposit slips. They write in transaction registers to reconcile each student-client deposit. At the end, after the bank is closed, they reconcile funds for the day. And since I am overseeing the operations of the branch banks, with the exception of the high school branch, I will take these funds to the bank for deposit. Deposits are recorded on an Excel spreadsheet, which is provided by the school for each student. Each student has a transaction register that is stored in the classroom. Funds are held in one school-specific account at the participating bank, and withdrawals or inquiries are done at the school through a bank champion. Usually this is a designated school employee, either a teacher, a principal, or a combination of administrators, that these people will set up the bank account, which is usually a checking account. The funds are issued by check to the student client. In our bank program, we work with the school to not only teach the students how banks operate, but we want them to become savers themselves. So the goal of our in-school banking program is for the students to create a good savings habit. Since 2009, the TS Institute has impacted well over 15,000 students in Iowa through in-school banking. We do classroom programming, special events, teacher workshops. We do after-school programming. The students participate in the stock market game. That's one of our after-school programmings. We do junior achievement programming in K through 8th grade. We do council on economic contests. We do financial literacy contests. We do concerts with a band called Gooding. And we do matching deposits at our in-school banks during national events, such as America Saves Week, Money Smart Week. We also promote their essay and poster contest. And all of this is something that is facilitated by the TS Institute. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Patty. And now we're here from our third former Youth Savings Pilot participant, Alana Parker from First Metro Bank.
Hey guys, hope everybody's having a good day so far. I've so enjoyed listening to everyone and hearing about all of your cool programs. Here at First Metro Bank, we are, this picture that you see right now, that's actually the president and CEO of our bank. He is talking to kindergartners about why it's important to save money and what interest is. So that's one of my favorite pictures. But a little bit about our bank, we're in the northwest corner of Alabama. And we serve three counties. We are a small bank. We have eight locations, one compliance office, one loan type building. And we have two student operated banks. Our financial literacy outreach program started in 2007. And like Michelle said, we started small, or as I like to say, we started in the shallow end of the pool and gradually got in over our heads, is what we feel like sometimes. But we started with fourth graders, then we saw fourth and eighth graders, then we saw fourth, eighth, 11th, and 12th graders, and it's just gotten bigger and bigger. We opened our student-operated branches at two of our largest local high schools in 2013. So we see, just in our financial literacy outreach program, between 5,000 and 7,000 kids every year. So a little bit about our area. We are in a unique area. I know when you think of the state of Alabama, you probably, you know, have some ideas of what it might be like. And I know you all probably think about football. But besides that, we have some definite challenges that we're dealing with that are newer to this state. For instance, the median family income dropped $4,000 between 2015 and 2016. Additionally, Alabama is number one, unfortunately, in prescription drug abuse. We have a huge meth problem here. So what that sort of all adds up to is kids in need, kids who are not getting financial literacy at home. And as, you know, being a part of the community bank, we felt like it was our duty to step in and get started. So if you want to go into the next slide for me. The part of our program that was included in the Youth Savings Pilot Program was specifically our student-operated branches. So I wanted to give you some pictures of what our branches look like. You can see the one at the top that's the Muscle Shoals Trojan branch. That was actually ticket-based that we converted. Down a little bit like the Falcon branch, that one is a little bit larger. We covered all of the construction and everything associated with those branches. They are open every school day during lunch. They're staffed by student tellers, and a teacher is responsible for those tellers every day. The kids earn a grade for their participation, and they also are subject to monthly audits. They have to do our online training that our real tellers here in the branches do. They do peer-to-peer training projects, which is a pretty cool thing that their teachers have implemented. So that is where they, you know, pick a topic, they learn about it, and they teach their peers about it. So that's been really, really positive thing because it gives the kids who are student tellers additional skills, you know, speaking in front of others, things like that. They also, the kids are also, our student tellers, participate in our bank's community project. So if we're trying to raise money for, you know, a local family or something like that and we do some sort of community event, the kids will come and work that event with us. So they really see what it is to be a part of a bank, a community bank. As far as the student teller requirements, they have to be a junior or a senior. Can't have any major disciplinary issues. They have to have good attendance because, you know, as well as IDEA, attendance is very, very important. A strong C GPA at least. And they complete an application, they turn it into the school. The school goes through, looks at attendance, discipline type things, and then gives us, you know, narrows the stack down and gives it to us. We meet with the kids and do an interview with them and sort of give them that experience of an interview. And then from that pool, our student tellers are chosen. So right now we have two student-operated banks, and we're getting ready to open a third. So we're pretty excited about opening a third one. Next slide. Probably the coolest thing about our program to me is that we have a non-custodial account that we offer to these kids. I've already sort of told you a little bit about our area and the struggles that we face. So one of the things that we found out really early on is that we have to offer them a non-custodial account. If we want student buy-in, if we want them to be involved, if we really want them to save money and do what it is that they need to do, we've got to offer a non-custodial account because what was happening in the past was these kids, most of them have jobs and receive direct deposit, especially when they're in 11th and 12th grade in high school. So what would happen is they would receive their direct deposit and the joint owner would go to the financial institution while the child was at school and withdraw all the money. So we found out from the students, you know, about what was happening. So we worked with Mr. Olson from the FDIC and Mr. Harris from the Alabama State Banking Department to figure out how we can make this work. I understand that different states have different state laws. So I think within the Youth Savings Pilot Program, they looked into that and actually provided some resources there in the study. So you can look at those and, you know, and find out more from your specific state. But we knew we had to be totally compliant with the state and federal regulations, but we also had to meet the needs of our community members. We had to meet them where they were. That's a big phrase here at our bank is meet your customer where they are, whether they're a millionaire or they're overdrawn and just lost their job. We have to meet them where they are and help them in whatever way that we can. So as far as our how to open an account, we have a pretty cool CIP program that our compliance officer came up with, and I am happy to share that with anybody who's thinking about implementing a student-operated bank. I know that's one of the main compliance concerns, so if you want to look at our forms, We just recently went through an exam, and they looked at our forms and felt great about them, the FDIC did. So we will be glad. I'll be glad to send those over to you. You can email me, and I'll share that with you. But in the interest of saving time, I'm just going to sort of talk about the savings account. Again, it's non-custodial. It does not require a joint owner. We have a $1 minimum deposit and then a $1 minimum balance. And the only reason we have that is because our core system does not recognize anything smaller than a dollar right now. And we're working on that because we'd like to be able to accept whatever they have to bring us, you know, just to get that account open. The kids get an ATM card, mobile banking, online banking, telephone banking. All of that is included in this account. And, of course, we don't do anything. I will tell you, one of the things that we found out was that we have to do lots and lots and lots of training with our student tellers and then again with the students who are opening the savings accounts. So talk to them about how to plan so that they can afford or avoid excessive transaction fees. That is a big thing that we really, really focus on because a lot of these kids are paying, you know, their car insurance, their cell phone bills, their some of them are paying daycare costs. So we have to really talk to them about budgeting and planning to make sure that they don't exceed the minimum transaction limits that are set for that account. Next slide, please. So one of the things that Tracy had asked us to go over and sort of talk about was the responsibilities, like what is the bank responsible for and what is the school responsible for. For the most part, we are responsible for the construction and upkeep of the branches. We purchased, we covered all of the renovation costs. We bought the night teller safe, the doors, the keys, all of that good stuff. The telephone line, the telephone, internet access. We make sure that they have access to our online training courses. We cover all the marketing materials. So basically any cost that they need. And then we do summer training with the tellers and we cover all of that as well. We're also responsible for monthly audits. We have employees out there at least, you know, at least once every 10 days we're there. We have a courier service that picks up their work every day. The school is responsible for daily oversight of the branches, looking over the teller work, surprise audits, you know, helping us select the tellers, the curriculum, the grades, the enforcement of the policies and procedures, and then helping the students choose their projects. Next slide. Yeah, there you go. So our best advice, number one, somebody knows somebody. Where's your contact? Somebody is in somebody's Sunday school class or somebody has a child who's on somebody else's soccer team. You know, that was one of the things that we ran into is we wanted to do these things, but, you know, someone would say, oh, gosh, well, I don't know anyone at that school. But somebody does. You know, talk to your branches that are located closer to those schools. You've got a contact somewhere and just work your contacts. Number two, find a way to say yes. It's so easy to say no. I know. We are busy. We have a lot of things going on, you know, 100 things happening at a time. But if you can find a way to say yes, make time. Make a way to say yes. If it's tell yourself if it's legal and compliant, I'm going to do it for a school and really make that happen. Send dynamic speakers. Michelle talked about that. I'm telling you the same thing. It takes one bad experience to ruin your reputation in school. Teachers are so interconnected thanks to social media groups, you know, email groups, those types of things. So you don't want, you know, a teacher saying, oh, gosh, you know, first semester I was trying to come and talk to students, and they sent the most boring speaker. My kids were just, you know, bored to tears or whatever. You want to send dynamic speakers. So that might be one of your best tellers or that might be your CEO. It's whoever is going to be a dynamic speaker and do a great job, that's who you want to send. Decide who you want to reach. It's easy to reach the kids on the front row. You know, the kids who are non-minority and, you know, have a really expensive handbag. But if you want to reach the kid on the back row who is way below the poverty level and first-generation, you know, English-speaking student, you're going to have to work harder. You're going to get CRA credit either way, but decide what you want to do and what your mission really is and decide who you want to reach and then make that happen. Understand your purpose and be purposeful. You're not there to sell credit cards and talk about how great your bank is. You're there to give financial literacy education to these kids, and that's got to always remain your priority. And if it does, if that's your true, sincere, genuine, authentic priority, the teachers are going to sense that, and your program is going to take off. There's nothing that will make your program bigger than sincerity in your mission. Be a friend to the teachers. They're the gatekeepers. They are overworked and underpaid. I loved what Michelle said about having a whole new respect for classroom teachers because that's absolutely true. I feel the same way. So be a friend to the teachers. Be there for what they need. If they call and ask for something, again, find a way to say yes. Number two, pencils. Number two pencils are always a hit. If you take a big box of number two pencils with a letter that says, thank you for all you do, teachers, we appreciate you so much, 1 month before each semester ends, I'm telling you, they will love you, and they will call you if they have any questions. You'll be their first phone call. And the last one is, don't forget why you're there. You know, you're there for those kids. You're there to make their lives better. You're there to give them the education that you already have that they may not get from home. So don't forget why you're there. And, again, if you want any of our details, CIP forms, withdrawal, or check cashing rules, email me. I am so happy to share those things. And that's it for me.
Thank you very much, Alana. And thank Patty and also Michelle. We appreciate sharing your different aspects of your the projects that you all have in place. Now, what we're going to do right now is open it up for any questions. Operator, do you have any questions in the queue? We have a couple of questions on this end, but we'll start with if there's any callers.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. You will be prompted to record your first and last name. To withdraw your request, press star two. Once again, to ask a question, press star, then one now. And at this time, we do not have any questions in queue.
Okay, thank you. Here's one of the questions that we have for today's presenters. For those who have established banks in your area school, how much did it cost you for a bank license / certificate if you are at Liberty this year?
Well, that's a good question. That's a really good question. So I guess there's a couple thoughts. Thank you, Eve, for this question. When I see bank license certificate, I look at it very technically, and I'm thinking of the branch application process. So if this is a branch application question, under something we're going to talk about at the end, the FDIC, the Interagency Youth Savings Guidance, generally speaking, if you're an FDIC or OCC-supervised bank and you're setting up a school-based branch as part of a financial education program, you don't have to apply for a branch license. You don't have to file a branch application from the FDIC. Some states have similar exceptions from their state branch application rules. But regarding costs more broadly, costs were all over the board. As we said in our youth savings pilot report, we cover some of the major groupings of cost, but costing models differ, particularly the accounting treatment of overhead and staff time.
Right.
I guess there's a couple thoughts. If that was not a good answer, I didn't answer your question, send us an email, and we can try to help a little bit more offline. And then I also see a question from Rosalind. Have any of the bank partners created a new account type for these projects? What was the process for this like? I think we saw, so for these projects, I'm interpreting that your school-based work, just more broadly. I think, again, there's answers both ways. We know some banks adapt in existing accounts. We know from our pilot some banks undertook college savings programs where they created restricted savings accounts working with a nonprofit partner. So I think there's flexibility. We saw both do this both ways.
And then we have a third question. Thank you all for your questions. We have a third question, which is a three-part question. Which types of accounts were the most popular? I think we had amongst us had mentioned that it seems as though it's equally divided across the board of the Youth Savings Pilot participants. And then another question is, were there issues with custodial accounts where guardians took out funds? Now, that's the case of where, Tracy, you wanted to?
I think Elena Parker from First Metro, she mentioned that her bank adapted some of the accounts when that issue arose. We don't have any statistics on how and if that is that has happened, but anecdotally we've heard from those such as Ms. Parker. So you know, there obviously is something that could happen, but not sure how often. And the final piece to that, can the bank hold custodial accounts for students? I would suggest checking with legal counsel for your bank. If we've noticed that in our pilot, when there were custodial accounts, they were typically held by nonprofit partners, and in some cases, the schools themselves. So there's a lot of flexibility in terms of that approach to accounts.
Great. Thanks very much. Okay, what we're going to do now is I'm going to pass the microphone over to Luke Reynolds.
Thank you, Nicola. We appreciate you taking time to participate on this webinar today. This is intended to be a brief introduction to the key learnings from our Youth Savings Pilot Report. Available on our Youth Banking Resource Center, which is www.fdic.gov/youth-savings, are several resources that go into more detail. First, as Tracy mentioned, we offer a roadmap to communicate the key learnings from our Youth Savings Pilot in an action-oriented way. So if you're looking at starting a new program, building on what we covered today, I encourage you to look at that roadmap for ideas of where to get started. Second, once you decide you do want to do more, often there's a lot to be gained from talking to other banks that are doing something similar, either have been doing something similar for a long time or maybe a little farther along or in a different place than you are. The FDIC a couple months ago launched what we call our Youth Banking Network. What this really is a community of practice for banks that are interested in enhancing their youth financial education efforts through addition of access to a savings account for young people. Our plan is to conduct periodic conference calls for banks around specific topics. These are really learning calls. We held our kickoff call a couple weeks ago and identified some of the key issues of interest to banks in the network. As Nicola gave an example of one of the things that we already did in the network that we hope to do more of, a bank wanted to see a sample MOU with a school to set up a school-based branch. We're able to tell the bank that the approach to MOUs really differ from perhaps a handshake agreement where a banker may be going into a school to conduct a class and collect deposits periodically to where there may be a more full-service in-school branch, in which case, I mean, certainly there's probably going to be an MOU. So those are the types of things that we're hoping to do more of in the network. Get specific questions, figure a way to get input from other banks in the network on those questions, and then get the initial question answered. We have on our website a list of banks in the Youth Banking Network, 40-some banks all across the country, all different sizes, in all different parts of the country. It's not too late to join. You can join the network. It's pretty easy to join. Those of you who are part of the network know the next step is know that we outline the key issues we heard on our kickoff call. We're asking feedback on that list of questions. Once we get feedback on that list of questions this week, probably be reaching out next couple weeks to ask for help in prioritizing what the first couple topics are. And then we'll be setting up a conference call around that topic within the next couple months. So from there, I want to thank everyone for taking time to participate. Once again, please visit the Youth Banking Resource Center on fdic.gov/youth-savings. If you have any questions whatsoever, send us an email. Again, I really want to thank our guest speakers and our presenters today. Hope everyone has a great rest of the day.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's conference. That does conclude the call at this time. All participants may disconnect.
Thank you for calling.